Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and welcome to A Fine Time for Healing, a sanctuary for your emotional well-being. Your host is Randy Fine, author of the memoir Finally, and the inspirational self-help book Awaken from Life. Randy.
Good morning. Thank you for tuning in to listen to A Fine Time for Healing. I am your talk radio show host, Randy Fine. Well, Friday, this past Friday, which was May 13th, was the second Friday of the month when I take your calls and answer your questions about narcissistic personality disorder abuse. We had a caller, and it was actually great because I know a lot of you can learn from what other people have to say, which is really the intention for me doing these shows. But I have gotten questions by email that I really want to address. And so I'm doing today's show as an extra show so that I can address these questions because it's much easier for me to answer on air than it would be for me to write this out in email. So let me get started. I'll do some of this, and then I think I have a caller, so I'll take that call shortly. Okay, the first person that emailed me wanted to know, or they wanted me to share the subtle forms of emotional abuse suffered by the narcissistic abuse victim. So let me go over a few of those things. Let's see. Okay. I started to talk about one of them the other day, and that's abuse by proxy. Abuse by proxy, or proxy recruitment, is a roundabout way of abusing, not by the abuser himself, but through the unwitting people he recruits. So to carry out the tactic, narcissists manipulate other people to side with them against their targets and then con them into doing their dirty work. And the people... narcissists who are in positions of authority or respect, so in other words, people that have clout or present themselves well, lawyers, wealthy people, doctors, politicians, parents, they tend to be the most influential recruiters. And so what they do is they gather like a small army of previously disinterested parties, known as flying monkeys, which I'm going to explain in a minute. They gather them, and then they feed each person propaganda about the victim. And this is known as the smear campaign. The smear campaign, and anyone who has ever commingled with a narcissist will eventually become a smear campaign victim. This is a revenge tactic that every narcissist uses against those they discard or those who abandon them, and they do this in order to save face. So they feed off of validation and admiration, and so they're very careful with the image that they portray. So if they have to throw somebody else under the bus, it's never going to be them. They're never going to have to take the fall. It's always going to be the victim of their abuse. And the narcissist begins his smear campaign immediately following the dissolution of his relationship with you. and he stays one step ahead of you at all times. Now, he knows that you're probably going to portray him in an unflattering way, so he must vilify you first. And because he remembers everything you ever told him about yourself and every unkind thing you ever said about other people to him, he's very effective at doing that. So he knows who you know, past and present, and he may even have access to your passwords or email. So this is a cautionary tale not to share those passwords or email with anybody that you feel is abusing you. Because once the narcissist decides he wants to destroy you, he's going to stop at nothing. He's going to attack you in every possible way. And he may even try to turn your children or family members against you. And when you try to defend yourself or make any accusations against him, you'll be portrayed as the unstable one. And he may even say you abused him. The more you try to defend your position, the worse he's going to make you look. So you cannot beat a narcissist at their own game. If you're the target of a smear campaign, the only thing you can do is to completely eliminate contact with him and his flying monkeys. And I'll talk about flying monkeys now. You may have heard it, and hearing the phrase probably conjures up the images from The Wizard of Oz, like the scene where the Wicked Witch sends her flying monkeys out of the window to capture Dorothy. And these flying monkeys have no mind of their own. They just do whatever the witch tells them to do, which flying monkeys of narcissists are the same way. They are vulnerable people who buy into the narcissist's lies and then robotically do his dirty work for him. And he gets others to harass his victims so his hands stay clean and he is unimpeachable. Narcissists smell vulnerability on others. So when they cross paths with highly empathetic, passive, naive, or gullible people, and they know that these people are easily commanded and will willingly buy into the lies of the narcissist, these are perfect recruits as flying monkeys. And the other recruits are bullies who the narcissist knows enjoys stirring up trouble and will just take this problem on for him. Now, every flying monkey's agenda is to further the narcissist's goal of abuse. And when the narcissist tells the flying monkeys about the cruel and unfair treatment he has been subjected to, they are appalled and willingly go out and fight their battles for them. Now, the problem is that the flying monkeys believe without proof or question that the narcissist is the victim and the victim is the abuser. And then they innocently wage war on the innocent, which is, in this case, us, the narcissistic abused victim. They even do detective work. They'll spy on the target and then report back. And if you have problems with flying monkeys, just know that they're blind to the truth. They may be personality disordered themselves, or they're terrified of the narcissist. So they may even be afraid of being targeted themselves. So it's very hard to confront these people and ask them to stop doing it. That doesn't usually work. The only thing to do when you have flying monkeys around you is to completely avoid contact with them and the narcissist. So if you are experiencing the wrath of a narcissistic abuser in your life, be careful what you say to anyone who may have contact with him, because these people do not have your best interest at heart. So beware. I know you really want validation and compassion for what you're experiencing, but you cannot, in this situation, blindly trust anyone. Now, the next thing I'm going to talk about is gaslighting or ambient abuse. And if you've read about narcissistic abuse, then I'm sure you've heard about gaslighting, and every narcissistic abuse victim is subject to it. So the goal of the narcissist is to erode his victim's mental stability by systematically chipping away at his victim's self-confidence, by challenging his victim's perceptions to the degree that she no longer trusts her own memory or judgment. She is eventually rendered helpless, insecure, and unable to independently function. And this is how he secures his narcissistic supply, when he can create someone who cannot function on their own. He has captive supply. The narcissist reinforces the confusion by telling victims that they are insane for believing what they believe to be true, or for not believing what the narcissist claims to be true. They tell their victims that they didn't hear what they thought they heard or see what they thought they saw. They tell them that they're imagining things, they're crazy, they're losing their minds, or oversensitive. Some narcissists will relocate things to confuse their victims and then deny that the item was ever there. There are 5 gaslighting techniques that narcissists use, and the first one is withholding. And with withholding, the abuser acts confused, pretends he doesn't understand what the victim's telling him, and withholds feelings. So he'll say things like, "Why are you trying to confuse me?" or "How can I possibly remember that?" or "You know I have a lot on my mind. Stop bothering me." They may say, "You know I don't like to talk about that," or "I have no idea what you want me to say." So these kind of questions are part of the withholding gaslighting tactic. The second one is called countering. And this is where the abuser questions the memory and thoughts of the victim and then supports the accusation with previous examples. So you would hear the abuser, the narcissistic abuser, saying things like, "You never remember things correctly," or "You take everything wrong," or "You're always jumping to conclusions," or "You know I never said that," or remember how wrong you were when you said that last time? So this is called countering. The third gaslighting technique is called blocking, or also known as diverting. And with this, the abuser refuses to answer or comment, changes the subject, faults the victim for accusing or blaming him, or faults the victim for reacting the way she did. So some examples of this would be, "We've already talked about this," or "Just shut up already," or "Where did you get such an idiotic idea?" or "Why can't you leave well enough alone?" or something like, "You always have to be right." So these are examples of blocking or diverting. The fourth gaslighting tactic is called trivializing. And this is where the abuser makes the thoughts and needs of the victim seem unimportant. So you might hear them say, "Why let something so stupid come between us?" or "You're just too sensitive. You always take things wrong." Or, "Why do you let everything bother you?" or "Stop analyzing everything." Or, "You always blow things out of proportion." or "That is hardly important." So that's called trivializing. The fifth and final gaslighting tactic is called forgetting, but it's also called denial. The abuser denies that things ever happened or denies promises he made to the victim to prevent her from getting a resolution. So with forgetting or denial, he'll say something like, "That never happened," or "I've never been there before," or "You never told me that," or "I never promised you that," or "I never saw that or moved that or took that," or something like, "You're delusional," or "There's nothing wrong with my memory," that kind of thing. So by creating all this confusion and anxiety, the narcissist is able to throw off the victim's equilibrium. And these are some of the things you may experience if you're being gaslighted. You wonder if you're the crazy one. You feel depressed, anxious, and hopeless. You don't trust your perceptions, beliefs, or judgments. you find it hard to make decisions. You are always apologizing for things you didn't do. You cannot figure out why you were so unhappy. You find yourself lying to protect yourself and others. You don't know who you are anymore. You're having memory issues. You've lost your personal power. You give in instead of fighting for what you believe in. You tend to get confused, disoriented, or paranoid. You think you are too sensitive or overreactive. You don't know what normal is anymore. You're the first one to take the blame. You never feel worthy or good enough. You always feel guilty about something. You are exhausted and drained all the time. You are fearful of your abuser, and you have shut down your feelings and emotions. So gaslighting could occur in any type of relationship, even if you are the most discerning, insightful person, because it is so stealth, so covert, that, you know, intelligent people believe they're immune to this type of brainwashing, but they're no match for a calculating narcissist. So beware. You know, this is done to captive soldiers. This is done to very astute, intelligent people. So no one is above gaslighting. Okay, the next one is called stonewalling. So nobody likes conflict. It's always disconcerting, especially when it occurs in close relationships. And we have all walked away from conflicts to avoid discussing something or having to talk about our feelings or just to avoid fighting. So when stonewalling is used as a temporary strategy or a way to cool things down in an argument, it can be used as a very beneficial thing to the relationship. It can be very helpful. But when it's deliberately used to avoid issues or to shut someone out or to control someone, it is highly destructive to the relationship. Narcissists, when I say they, use stonewalling strategically because it takes little or no effort to execute, but it is highly effective in creating frustration, desperation, humiliation, and infuriation in their targets. They're targeted victims. So some of the things that are included in stonewalling are walking away with no explanation while the other person is trying to discuss an issue, refusing to discuss or collaborate on something that is important to the other person, drawing out a problem longer than necessary so the other person cannot get a satisfactory answer or resolution or even find an alternative solution, accusing the other person of not making sense or talking too much to be able to justify tuning that person out, pretending to listen to the other person and sitting there with a stone face and not offering a response, acting tired, bored, or uninterested in what the other person has to say while they're saying it, and refusing to compromise with the other person or agree on a solution to her concerns. And stonewalling makes victims feel like they're crazy. They're being driven crazy. The problem is the more dismissed they feel, the more desperate their attempts are to be heard. And then that just gives the narcissist more fodder to tell them they're stupid or crazy or walk away from them. And, you know, narcissists find driving crazy. They find the struggles, emotional struggles of their victims entertaining. They enjoy humiliating people, and then they enjoy watching them squirm. It's pretty sick stuff, you know? Okay, now I'm going to talk about hoovering. And I just actually posted something about hoovering on my website, randygfine.com. So if you go there, you'll see the article. But actually, I think it's pretty much what I'm going to talk about now. But it's really common for every narcissistic abuse victim to finally pull away or get the guts to maybe go no contact with their abuser. And then before you know what happens to you, you're sucked right back in. And everybody that comes to me for counseling always says to me, I feel so stupid because I got away and they keep sucking me back in. And I don't know why I keep going back. I don't understand. What's wrong with me? Why do I keep going back when I know I'm being abused? Well, this is called hoovering. The actual definition of hoovering is vacuuming. So it's sort of like hoovering is sucking back in. It's regaining control of people against their will who have escaped or gone no contact. And the some of the narcissistic hoovering tactics include acting kind and considerate to convince you they've changed, telling you they're sick in pain or dying in the hospital, requesting information from you that they need and they know you're the only one who would know it, telling you that someone needs your help, suddenly apologizing, or whatever they do that sounds like apologizing, for what they did to you when they have never apologized before. All of a sudden, you cut them off, and now they're apologizing. Don't fall for it. They try to return items you left behind. You may have been calling them for years and years and years to come get their stuff. Now, all of a sudden, they're calling you. They want something from you. Contacting you because they forgot to tell you something. Or sometimes they will develop relationships with people who are close to you to get close to you. They may email or text or call you as if nothing happened. Or they may text you and then their excuse would be, oh, I didn't mean to text you. I was trying to text somebody else. And a lot of times, I mean, this actually just happened to me. I got a call from my mother the other day after not talking to her for probably 2 years. And I let it go to voicemail, which I always do, so I can be in control of if I choose to call back. And she called to tell me that my father's sister died. Well, my father's sister was 101 years old. My mother is in contact with both of my sisters, and she knows both of my sisters tell me everything. So she called to share this information. Well, you know, I'm not buying it because I know what she's trying to do. This is a hoovering tactic. She's trying to get me on the phone because by getting me on the phone, she can put on her pitiful voice and hopefully suck me back in. So that is hoovering. And the quote that I like the best is by Dr. Phil. He says, "The best predictor of future behavior is relevant past behavior." So narcissists don't change. So just don't fall for these tactics. They don't change. As much as you really want them to change, and it would make your life so much easier if they would, if you buy it, you're going to fall into the trap. Okay, now let's talk about triangulation, which many of you have heard of. And this is an indirect form of communication that is orchestrated by the narcissist to manipulate and control the information, the flow of information, among two or more people. And it happens in the family, it happens in romantic relationships, friendships, and it even happens in the workplace. This is a game that the narcissist uses. So he will pit people against each other and do it in such a way that he can never be called on it. So in family relationships, siblings may disagree or even hate each other. And it's not because of anything they've really done to each other, but it's because of what the narcissist has told each one about the other and tells them not to say anything. He takes them under his, you know, in his confidence, which everybody that's around a narcissist is vying to be taken in his confidence because they don't want to be the victim. So everyone's going to keep that confidence, and the narcissist knows that. So he shifts blame off of himself and onto others. So this is how he does this. So, you know, they're Teflon. Narcissists are forever the innocents. Nothing ever sticks to them. They'll even manufacture situations that create insecurity and jealousy. So, like, they may say to their partner, well, my ex-partner's been calling me, and she says she really loves me and she really wants me back. And, you know, if you don't treat me good, you should come back. You know, if your new partner doesn't treat you good, come back to me. But see, it's all lies. It's all made up. That's part of triangulation. Now we're going to talk about objectification and dehumanization. Dehumanization is actually what it's called. Objectification is where the narcissist treats the person like an object, tool, or commodity with no concern for their rights, individuality, needs, feelings, opinions, or dignity. They do this. They objectify their victims so they can abuse them without feeling guilty. Once a victim is objectified, he becomes like an inanimate pawn and nothing more than that. So this is how, you know, you wonder how they can be so cruel. This is how they do it. This is one of the ways that they do it. And the other one is dehumanization. And dehumanization is, that's when they deprive you of having human qualities. So when someone is dehumanized, they're considered unworthy of moral consideration. This is something that the Nazis did with the Jews. They told all their soldiers that they're dirty animals. They made them less than human so that nobody would have a problem or have a conscience when it came to treating them the way he wanted to treat them. So they portray others as less than human, and this is how they find justification in maltreating them in whatever way meets their selfish agendas. Now, another question I got, I'm going to try to go through this. I love that you understand how the narc parent causes division and jealousy among siblings. You suggest that siblings come together and support each other, but how is that possible when my younger siblings are now basking in the attention, love that they are receiving from my narc mom, and they're all against me? This person used to be the golden child, but she got healthy and now she's the scapegoat child. Well, I understand this. If you've read or listened to the things that I put out there, you know that I have two sisters who are now on board with me, but they were not always on board, and they put me through a lot of guilt having to cut my parents out of my life. They just didn't understand. We're not a religious family, yet I got the thou shalt honor thy father and thy mother. I got that thrown at me. But when I backed off, their abuse, my mother's abuse of them, ramped up. And they got to points where they were so devastated by the abuse that I was able to work with them and begin to explain to them and send them information so that they could look at it on their own. And gradually, they began to see exactly what my mother was doing to them, and they were upset about it, and they wanted to know more. And then I was able to guide them through that healing process. So if you have siblings that you really want to get on board with you, I suggest that you back off and just kind of wait for the right moment to begin introducing things, very little at a time. But that's the way to do it. And when my book comes out, Close Encounters of the Worst Kind, when that comes out, you'll just be able to hand it to them, and they'll be able to read for themselves, because there's a chapter in there about siblings and what they go through. There's a chapter about family abuse and what the family goes through. So they'll be able to see it for themselves. So that's going to be a very helpful tool for you when that book does come out. I don't know when it's coming out. I hope soon. Now, another question is, how will I know if I'm a narcissist myself? And I get this question a lot. So somebody with healthy narcissism has a personal responsibility, a sense of humor, a sense of selflessness, empathy, and the capacity for developing and maintaining intimate relationships. Some adults have narcissistic personalities but don't have the personality disorder. So they may be seen as arrogant, self-focused, and overconfident, but they don't have the exaggerated or grandiose view of themselves as someone that with NPD has. Those who have narcissistic personalities without the disorder do not have the extreme defensive reactions those with NPD have when they're called on it. And unlike those with narcissistic personality disorder, once these people become aware that their behavior is undesirable, they're likely to change it or at least address it and have the willingness and the ability to change it. Narcissists never do. You're not a narcissist if you're capable of accepting the fact that others find your behavior objectionable. The raging is another sign. If you're criticized and you rage, well, then I would start looking into the fact that you have narcissistic personality disorder. But the fact that you're even questioning it tells me that you probably don't have it, because narcissists never think anything about them is wrong, so they never question it. They never want to look inside because they have nothing inside but loathing, self-loathing. So if you're introspective, I would say I wouldn't worry about it. And if you have some narcissistic tendencies that are not related to the disorder, you can work on that. But some narcissism is healthy. We all should care about ourselves and love ourselves, not to the point where it hurts others, though. That's where we draw the line. What is the next question? Okay. I'm hesitant to go to counseling anymore. Before I moved 500 miles away from my mother, she actually stole each counselor that I went to in our hometown. The first counselor was so taken by my mother that they actually used to go to lunch together and became friends. She also began seeing my second counselor without my permission. So this makes it very hard for me to trust therapists. After moving away, I found a new therapist. This therapist, however, does not seem to understand narcissism and has not wanted to put labels on my mother. What can I do as far as finding a therapist that actually understands the family dynamics involved with having a narcissistic parent? Well, I talk about this all the time, and I'm going to talk about it again because this is a question I get over and over and over, and why people end up coming to me as their counselor. When therapists go to school to get their training, whether it be their undergraduate, their master's, their doctorate, they're not trained in most cases to understand the impact of narcissistic abuse, which is called narcissistic victim syndrome. They are, in fact, trained to recognize a person with narcissistic personality disorder. But the victims of it have so many things, it's such a conglomerate of twisted problems that the abuse victim has. And if they're not trained to recognize it, they will see it as specific things. They'll see that you're coming in depressed, or they'll see that you have issues relating to your mother or marital issues or whatever they be, or anxiety or such. But they won't hear your story and recognize that you've become a narcissistic abuse victim. So no matter what degree your therapist has, if you don't vet them ahead of time and make sure that they are super experienced in this aspect of psychology, narcissistic personality, NPD abuse syndrome or victim syndrome, then you are wasting your time, totally wasting your time. In some cases, you may even feel worse, because they may say something to you like, well, your parents are getting older, you know, maybe it's time to start reconciling that relationship. Or don't you think you've been sad long enough? You know, don't you think it's time to get over this? Or let's work on getting over this. But narcissistic abuse is not about getting over it. That's not what it's about. It's about starting at the beginning, where it began, taking it apart, talking about all the tactics that were used on you to confuse you and to mess up your mind, and even the fact that there could potentially be some sort of brain alteration. If you were abused in childhood, there could be some brain alteration that you're going to have to recognize and live with to a certain extent. But that's why this is a really, really tough problem. And, you know, I hope as I go along with this to be able to find people throughout the country that I can refer you to, so that if you want to see somebody locally, you'll have somebody locally. At this point, I have not found anybody that I would, you know, personally be able to recommend to you. But I do the counseling. And if you are interested in talking to me, I do it by phone, and I can also do it by Skype if you'd like face-to-face counseling. But this way I can do it to anywhere in the country and anywhere in the world, and I have done it with other countries, with clients who have called from other countries because they don't have this kind of service in their country. They don't know who to go to. So I am available for you, and I do this kind of counseling on a regular basis. I've lived it. I've experienced it. I've researched it. I know everything there is to know about this, and I also know how to help you through it. So I'm not saying you have to go to me. I'm just saying I am there for you should you choose that. Other than that, I hate to say it, but you're on your own. You're really going to have to just do your research. If you've had a bad experience, don't let that jade you against getting help in the future, because it's just because you have not found the right therapist or counselor to help you. But don't be deceived by degrees. They are not, that doesn't really help you as a narcissistic abuse victim. Degrees don't help. Experience does. Now, there are counselors out there and psychotherapists out there who have recognized this and do work with this. But you'll have to pick them out and be very, very careful that they have tons of experience with this. Because you mean a lot to me. Your mental health means everything to me. And I don't want you in the wrong hands, which is why I offer the service, because I know if you're in, you know, with me, you're safe. So that's what I have to say about that. Well, I don't have callers, but actually this wasn't a show about taking callers. So that's okay, because I was able to really cover all the questions that were asked of me in the last month. If you have questions that you want to ask to me, you can always email me at loveyourlife@randygfine.com. loveyourlife@randigfine.com. And send your questions to me. Now, on the second Friday of every month, and in June that will be June 10th, Friday, June 10th, 11 a.m. Eastern Time, I will be here to take your calls, answer your questions. If you'd like to send me questions ahead of time to read on air, you can do that, and I will read them on air and answer those questions. By your asking questions, everybody benefits, because most everyone that's listening has similar questions, if not the same exact ones. So please feel free to share. You're helping others. You're helping your sister and brother survivors with your experiences. So please share. And another thing about the counseling that I do, it's all private, confidential, anonymous, so you don't have to worry about that. And you know, that's pretty much what I have to say about that. So I hope to hear from you. If you have not already visited my Facebook page, Narcissistic Abuse Survivors United, please do. It's now picking up speed and growing because I've asked you guys to visit it and start participating in it. So go to Narcissistic Abuse Survivors United and like the page. And then I post everything that I write or speak about in this regard, in about NPD abuse. I post everything to the Facebook page. And I also post everything I do, not only narcissistic abuse, but everything that I write about, which is many, many different things about relationships, spirituality, many, many things I write about. You can find articles on my website at randygfine.com, randigfine.com. So visit there, check out my page, and also there's links from my website to my counseling services directly to make an appointment if you'd like. There's links to every show I've ever done on Blog Talk Radio, and lots and lots and lots of articles to read. So I hope you will visit me there. Send me a comment if you like something. And I'll talk to you again on June 10th. So don't be afraid to call in. My show tomorrow is with Dawn Westmoreland, and Dawn is a whistleblower. She goes into she teaches people how to fight corporations when they have been abused, sexually abused, emotionally abused, these kind of things. She actually she had a case against the VA and won. So this woman knows what she's talking about. So tune in tomorrow and listen to that. And on Friday the 20th, I have Dr. Spoonhour, who is my chiropractor. I think he is so amazing. He helped me get rid of the pain that no one else could get rid of. So he's going to talk about what he does and how chiropractic can help others and dispel the myths about it, because I had the same myths. I thought, he's just going to crack my back and make me worse, but that is not what chiropractic is. So listen in and hear what he has to say. So that's it for today. All my shows are archived after broadcasting and can be listened to at your convenience on Blog Talk Radio, iTunes, or through the show links on my website. Thanks again for tuning in and listening to A Fine Time for Healing. This is Talk Radio show host, author, and life issues counselor Randy Fine, signing off until next time. May joy and serenity always be yours. Goodbye.
Thanks for listening. You can find out more about Randy at her website, Randy G. Fine, RandyGFine.com. Join her next time for more of A Fine Time for Healing.
Hard not to hesitate, but we can't wait. Be the change. Be the change. Be the change. Be the change. There's a better way.